really with an invitation. Lynette Fromm had a disagreement with her father, and it was just over a matter of preference, of opinion. And with that, he threw her out of the house. So Lynette was just distraught and didn't know what to do. Now, she was the person who lived on the other side of the tracks, a person who wouldn't be caught dead in church, a person who was really flirting with she was pretty much married to the drug scene, had taken a lot of trips on acid, and was a frequent and habitual marijuana user. As she sat there distraught on a park bench, she saw what she thought to be a little green man come up and begin talking to her. And as they talked, she grew more infatuated in a reluctant kind of way. She wished he would go, wished he would get out of there, didn't want any part of him, yet there was something magnetic about the conversation that drew her into his trust. Well, the little green man wasn't really a little green man. Some of you may know that little green man by the name of Charles Manson. And Lynette Fromm became one of his women. She became his main woman. And it was mesmerizing because all he says is, look, I'm going to a place up the road. Do you want to come? All it took was an invitation by the wrong person under a wrong set of circumstances. And a few years later, this Lynette Fromm in 1975 would work a crowd, the same crowd that Gerald Ford was working. And they're both making their place to the very front of the line, and Gerald Ford is shaking hands. And as he got to her, he saw not a hand outstretched to welcome, but a .45 caliber gun pointed at him. She squeezed the trigger, and the gun misfired. Gerald Ford's life was spared that day. Squeaky Fromm's life has never been the same since. An avid follower of Charles Manson, but all it took was an invitation under the right circumstances for her to become a part of his tribe, of his clan, of his group of people. Most things we do in life begin as an invitation, don't they? Really, how many have been involved in a pyramid schemes, because they're not all schemes, but is it tiered marketing? I don't know, is that what it's called, Jim? You're involved in Shackley. How many know what Shackley is, or maybe have been distributors for Shackley? You know what that is? How many have been involved in that kind of business or attempted to get in that kind of business before? You know, a lot of us have, you know, on numbers of occasions. I've learned it's never for me. So please, if you're ever trying to find someone to work your business, please don't call it Becky and I. We will say yes, and we will invest our money, and then we will fall flat on our face because we just don't have the time, I guess. I don't know what it is. But that's the kind of thing. Everything starts by an invitation. Some people do extremely well in that kind of business. But you always find people with like interests. My wife sold Mary Kay for a number of years. Why? Because she loved Mary Kay. Became a distributor, started doing the parties, doing the whole nine yards, and she would, at the end of every Mary Kay party, she says, and you know what? You can do this too. And she tried to get people to work under her. People who sell Shackley will always say, you know what? You don't have to pay the retail price on this. You can pay the distributor's price on this. All you have to do is sign up. You've been there, done that. It takes the invitation. And for some people, they accept the invitation. In fact, I think most of us came to church because we were invited to go. Not me. I came to church on drugs. I did. My mom and dad drugged me to Sunday school. It was a cheap joke, wasn't it? They drugged me to church and they drugged me to youth group. They drugged me every time the church drawers were open. I was drugged right there. But it's by an invitation that some of you have come to church today. You may have been coming for quite some time. You may be an old veteran of church attendance, but I dare say it was probably because somebody asked you to come to church. An invitation. And in this church, you found a home. In this group of people, you found people that you genuinely liked, and they liked you. And you wanted to be a part of their life, and they wanted you to be a part of their life. And it has worked out well for so many of us here in church because of the fellowship, of the friends that we have developed here in church. All it takes is an invitation. And that's exactly what took place at the well in Samaria with Jesus and this woman. And in chapter 4 of John, we read this. Now the Pharisees heard that Jesus was gaining and baptizing more disciples than John, although in fact it was not Jesus who baptized, but his disciples. But when the Lord learned of this, he left Judea and went back once more to Galilee. Now he had to go through Samaria. So he came to a town in Samaria called Sychar, near the plot of a ground Jacob had given to his son Joseph. And Jacob's well was there. And Jesus, tired as he was from the journey, sat down by the well. And it was about the sixth hour. And about the sixth hour, it is just really hot. And Jesus has traveled a mountain road and a mountain passage to get to this city in Samaria. And so he is hot, and he is tired, and he is thirsty. And in the middle of the day, in the heat of the day, you find this woman coming to draw water, which is not the time of the day when people, women, drew water. It was just hot. And you know this story. But let me go on. When the Samaritan woman came to draw water, Jesus said, "Hey, will you give me a drink?" And his disciples had gone into the town to buy food. But the Samaritan woman said to him, "Hey, you're a Jew and I'm a Samaritan woman. How can you ask me for a drink? For Jews do not associate with Samaritans." And this is true. In 122 B.C., the Assyrians had ruined the northern tribes of Israel and had infiltrated and inhabited and sent citizens to the regions of Samaria. And so the regions of Samaria were inhabited by Jews, but Jews that had been left. When a conquering nation came in to a city or to another nation, they would take out the brightest, strongest, healthiest, most intelligent people of that region, and they would take them back with them. In this case, it was just Assyria. And Assyria would send some of its people back to inhabit the region they had just conquered. So that way, the people of the region they had just conquered could not get an army again and muster a force against them. And so the Samaritans had been routed. And they were now infiltrated with inhabitants of Samaria and inhabitants of Judaism. And over the years, they had intermarried. And so this was a very nasty thing for Jews to do, to have intermarried. It was just a wrong thing because it didn't keep the tribes pure. And in the process of doing that, there came a difference in the way the Samaritans in the northern part of Israel and the Jerusalemites in the southern territory, the Judeans, worshipped. You see, up to 100 years before that, or a couple hundred years before that, the Ark of the Covenant used to reside at Shiloh, or Shechem, the Mount Shechem. And when David said we need to get the Ark of the Covenant back down into Jerusalem, make it back to that home. He took it from Shiloh and moved it down here. Well, when he did that, the northern Israelites thought that the southern Israelites had gone into apostasy because they had stolen the Ark of the Covenant from the northern kingdoms, taken it to a southern kingdom. Well, that grew into an animosity, a bitter religious dispute between Israelites. Well, I guess church disputes, Pastor, have been going on for a long time. Family disputes. It isn't anything new that we've come up with on the news. So look, if you're here today because, or fearful that a church is going through a dispute or coming from a church that has gone through a dispute, I want to let you know it's nothing new. It's been going on for a long time, so just settle in. That's how God builds and develops us. That's just the bottom line. So you've got these two nations now that are bitter at each other over a religious object, the Ark of the Covenant. And so the Jews of the South really didn't like the Jews of the North, and the Jews of the North didn't like the Jews of the South. And so there was this religious animosity back and forth. So this woman says, "What are you doing talking to me? You're a Jew. I don't want anything to do with Jew, and you don't want anything to do with me. So why are you talking to me?" And Jesus responded to her in verse 10. "If you knew the gift of God and who it was who asked you for a drink, you would have asked him, and he would have given you living water." "Oh, sir," the woman said, "you have nothing to draw with, and the well is deep. Where can you get this living water? Are you greater than our father Jacob, who gave us the well and drank from it himself, as did also his sons and his flocks and his herds?" And Jesus simply answered, "Everyone who drinks from this water is going to get thirsty again. Whatever drinks the water I give him will never thirst. Indeed, the water I give him will become in him a spring of water, welling up to eternal life." Well, she says, "Well then, I'll tell you what. You give me that water. That's what I want. Give me this water so I don't have to get thirsty and have to keep coming to draw water." And now Jesus says these profound words. "Okay, go call your husband and come back." "Well, I don't have a husband. I don't have a husband." Well, then Jesus said, "You're right when you said you don't have a husband. The fact is, you've had five husbands, and the man you now have is not your husband. What you have just said is quite true." I don't know about you, but if my dirty laundry had just been aired out by a stranger to me, I'd perk up my ears just a little bit. I want you to see something just really about this. Jesus has pointed out just some obvious things about this woman. How many times has she been married? Are you awake? How many times has she been married? Thank you. Was she currently married? Was she currently living with a man? Did Jesus consider that legal? Make your own conclusions. He's now given her a challenge. And she is responding by trying to divert his attention. Notice, he's just told her everything that she's done. And Jesus just states an obvious point. The guy you're living with isn't your own man right now. But in the question, it was like Jesus was scolding her and saying, that's not right. And so what do people who are not doing anything right, when they perceive that they're talking to a preacher, what do? They turn religious on you. They do. I promise you this. I go out golfing all the time with people who don't know Jesus as Savior. I'll get apparently sometimes teamed up with other golfers, and Pastor Greg has done the same thing. You go out as a single, and they don't want a single guy playing. They want a double or a foursome, so they hook you up with some people that you don't even know. About halfway through the game, and the first half of the game, they are cursing and swearing, and they are kicking, and they are mad because they can't hit a ball straight. And then you finally get around to saying, well, what do you do for a living? And they tell you. And they say, well, what do you do for a living? And I say, well, I'm a preacher. Those people who've been dropping the F-bomb all the time, all of a sudden they become very religious people. And they want to assert how often they go to church and how well-versed they are in the things of religion. And so, look what she does. Sir, the woman said, I can see that you are a prophet. So since you're a prophet, our fathers worshipped on this mountain, but you Jews claim that the place where we must worship is in Jerusalem. And Jesus declared, believe me, woman, a time is coming when you will worship the Father neither on this mountain nor in Jerusalem. And you Samaritans worship what you do not know. We worship what we do know, for salvation is from the Jews. Yet a time is coming, and now has come, when the true worshipers will worship the Father in spirit and truth. For they are the kind of worshipers the Father seeks, and God is spirit. And his worshipers must worship in spirit and in truth. Well, the woman said, well, look, I know that Messiah, the one who's called the Christ, is coming. And when he comes, he's going to explain everything to us. And Jesus said, I who speak to you am he. A simple declaration that you really are now talking to the Messiah. And she fully understood she was talking to Messiah. Well, what happens at this point? Well, the disciples return. They're surprised to see him talking to a Samaritan woman. But everyone was afraid to ask, you know, what do you want? And why are you talking to her? Then leaving her water jar, the woman went back to the town and said to the people, come, see a man who told me everything I ever did. Could this be the Christ? And they came out of the town and made their way toward him. All it took was an invitation. All it took was someone to say, look, I've met someone who's told me everything I've ever done. Come, you hear him too. I've met someone who has claimed to be Messiah. Will you come? Meet him too. It is simply an invitation. Why did she invite people? Because she was excited about the news that she heard. Some of you have been so kind to email me certain things. You know, if you got a special TV program coming up or something, you either email me or you call me on the phone and say, hey, watch on a certain time and certain station. If this is on, you'll really enjoy it. And why do you do that? Because you think that the information that I'll hear is really worthwhile and good for and beneficial for me. And so you call me of my well-being, and that's good. I'm grateful for that. But it takes that invitation because you're excited about what you've heard. Haven't you been excited about something you've gotten involved in and you couldn't wait to tell somebody? You know, I just came back from Israel not many weeks ago, and I'm excited to have told people about my trip. And I was excited to show some of the pictures that I had taken on the trip this past week. And then I had a privilege to sit out and share it again. And I really do consider it a privilege to share the photos with everything because it reminds me of some stuff that I saw in Israel that will and has changed my life for a dramatic way. And you get excited about that. And you want to tell someone. You want to invite someone. Hey, are you excited about your Christian faith? Now, I know that some of us, how many have been a Christian 40 years or more? Raise your hand. Thank you. 40 years or less, raise your hand. The 40 years or more has it. Isn't that amazing? We're filled with a church of people who have known Jesus for 40 years or more. Now, I know that when you're married 40 years or more, I mean, Becky and I have been married 35, and Pastor and Denise will be married 20 coming up in a few weeks. And it's exciting to live like that, but I tell you one thing. My wife and I aren't sparking after 35 years like we were the first two. If you know what I mean, and I know you know what I mean. We've settled into a comfortableness in about our relationship. Are we excited about being married? Are we growing closer in our marriage? Absolutely. But we're just not showing it that outwardly excitement anymore. You know, I'm afraid we get like that in our church life too. Been here 40 years a believer. Tell me something. Are you still as excited about trusting Christ and being avid in your faith and excited about your faith now as you were 40 years ago? Some are. Some are. And I can tell that they are because they're not afraid to invite people out to church. Because they realize that it, for them it all began with an invitation. Yes, she sat on that park bench in 1971, met Charles Manson, and responded just because of an invitation. I wonder what would have happened, don't you? If some Christian had walked up to her on that stage, on that street corner that night, on that street bench, and began talking to her about Jesus, do you think she may have made that decision to follow Christ at that moment? Because all she was looking for was someone to love and accept her for who she was. I do find that in Jesus' invitation. Though I think his question brought guilt, I do believe that she felt accepted by Christ. I think that this woman of Samaria wanted to know more about Jesus, and as a result, the town came out and they heard more about Jesus. And the scriptures tell us that as a result of her invitation to meet Jesus, many of the townspeople began to put their confidence and their trust in Jesus as Savior. You see, when you invite somebody, you never know exactly how the invitation is going to take shape, do you? You never know if it's going to be a dud or a tremendous success. You don't know if someone's going to come and hear the word and never darken the doors of a church again, or whether they're going to receive the message in fullness and receive the message that it changes their life. You never know what an invitation will do. But you must invite. When's the last time you invited someone to church? Anyone to church? Kids, grandkids, friends, neighbors. When's the last time you asked them to come out to a church event? Here's what I think we ought to declare, Pastor. We haven't talked about this in staff meeting and haven't talked about it with anyone, but I really think that we ought to declare something, that any event that we do, whether it's a potluck dinner, anything that we do, has the intent of reaching someone in the community who isn't a part of the church. And then if you want to be a part of the potluck dinner, here's what you have to do. It's easy. Bring someone. Wouldn't that be a novel idea? You can't eat unless you brought somebody. Well, Pastor, there'd be few people eating dinner that day. Well, there might be, but I bet that those who ate would have a great time because they brought their friends. Don't you want your friends to meet your friends here? Really? Or no? My church friends are my church friends, my neighborhood friends are my neighborhood friends, and I hope they never talk to each other. I'm afraid that's some of what Christianity is all about, and the Christian life is all about, because, well, Isaiah said it best, and he said, you know, their lips are with me. Their lips know how to worship, but their heart is far from me. We learned that in our lesson this morning. I wonder how often our heart is really apart from God. But we know how to talk it here. We know how to live it here. We know what to say here. We've got that. We've got here down pat. You know, I bet in a church this size, I challenged a Sunday school class this morning, but I'm going to do it again. I bet in a church this size and a group this size, I bet there are some people who use some juicy language outside the walls of this church under given situations. You know, like you've smashed your finger with the hammer and you're not saying God bless it. I bet you change your language. I bet there are things that you say outside the walls of this church that you would never think about saying inside the walls of this church. I bet there are things that you eat outside the church that you would never think about eating right here on the platform, in the sanctuary. I bet there are things that we do outside the walls of the church we wouldn't even think about doing right in here. Is that right? You see the duplicity that we live. We know how to speak with our lips. We know how to pray. We know how to teach. We know what to say. But when we get outside the walls of the church, we are totally something else. And that's why we don't want to invite people. Because if I invite people, I'm going to have to maintain a standard of spiritual living and accountability. And I don't want to do that. But all it takes is an invitation. Jesus always invited people to follow him, and they always had a right to do so. I think we ought to begin to do things as a church, whatever our activity is. I really think it ought to be geared with the purpose of this potluck dinner that we're not having today. Okay, I'm talking about potluck dinner sometimes. Some of you were thinking, are we going to eat dinner today? No, we're not. But I think that in the process, that when we have a potluck dinner, you know, the whole process of the dinner is to invite people who have never been in our church before. You know, when we have an event of the church, whether it be triumphant or some other concert or some other meeting, the purpose of the event ought to be this, that we are able to invite people who have never gone to church before. I think that if we do something on an out basis, We're thinking about doing something on the beach in August, just to hand out some, give some hot dogs and water to those who happen to be on the beach at that time. Give out, I don't know, a couple hundred hot dogs and a couple hundred bottles of water, and when they're gone, they're gone, and the rest of the time we'll just sit around and have a beach party. I don't know, but we'll get around and maybe just pass those out. But they ought to be so the fact that we are able to invite people to church. Yeah, WMU Wednesday night. Bring someone to WMU. Let them know what's going on in the world of mission. We have a missions conference scheduled for October. It will be exciting to see what God can do in the lives of our church, of those people who will be committed to doing the work of mission. Because the theme of the missionary conference is called to Him. You know, we're not asking people to be called to Africa or South America or to some dangerous part of the world. We're just asking that God would call people to Himself, and that people, wherever they are, would learn to serve Christ to the fullest of their capacity, because that's what God has intended for us to do. And it all begins with an invitation. The invitation to trust Christ. The invitation to follow Him. And then you leave the results with God. Now here's your church assignment this week. Here it is. Now remember, last week I kind of issued a church assignment on the testimony. You know, did you really find someone to share your testimony with and said, look, my pastor gave me an assignment, I had to share my testimony. Well, because I didn't preach that message and it was Pastor Greg, you know, who should have given the assignment. Maybe some say, oh, no, I'm not going to do that. But here, I'm preaching the message. I'm giving the assignment. I think it's a reasonable assignment. What do you think that assignment's going to be? Someone tell me. Wow. See how easy the application of the message becomes when you keep the message simple? Let's say it all begins with an invitation. Now, I don't know who God is going to lead you to, but here's what I honestly, truly believe. I honestly, truly believe that if you make that commitment today to invite someone to church next week, that God will give you someone who is receptive to the invitation. And I believe that the invitation itself will be the icebreaker and the barrier that breaks it down, that you can share Christ with them in the future. Because remember, last week I did ask how many of you wanted to see your friends go to hell, and no one raised your hand. So because you don't want to see your friend go to hell, and I don't want to see your friend go to hell, here's what you have to do. It begins with an invitation. And people are just waiting to be asked to come to church. They really are. They really are. And so that's your assignment. This week, ask someone to come to church. Good. Well, you keep asking them this week, because that's your assignment. You ask them specifically this week. And next week, if she gets her two out and you get your one or two out, imagine what God could do if we just asked people to come. It's not a complicated message today. There is value in repetition because you got the gist of the message. You just have to ask. And we have to begin to do things as a church that allow you to feel comfortable to ask people to come. To our outings, to our gatherings, to our outreach events. We should not be sitting there entertaining ourselves. We should be reaching out in everything that we do. Are you committed to that? Are you? Yes, and if you're committed to that, stand to your feet. If you're not committed to that, stay seated. My Father, these people have stood only, you know, some because they're really committed to it, others just because everyone else was standing. But you're seeing the heart and you're seeing the intent of people here. And my prayer for our congregation is that we begin to catch a real new vision for church and ministry. You know, we can decorate a stage and we can decorate a church, but if the people don't ask, if the people don't invite, and if the church doesn't meet the need, people aren't going to come. And so as church and leaders alike, we really do need a fresh work from you in our life. In leadership, Pastor Greg and I need to be sensitive to the leading of your Spirit in our lives, in ministry and outreach. In the congregation, we need people who are seeing beyond our own needs and seeing beyond our own limitation. And we're beginning to pray and ask and do and reach further than we ever could. Now I know there are some folks here that are just elderly. They're just lucky to make it out to church. And they consider that a privilege. And it is. It's a great privilege for them. But even in their homes, even in their weakness, even in their limitations, may they have a vision for the greatness of God that extends beyond where they are, extends beyond their limits, their human limitations. And Father, may they begin to pray and ask and phone call and encourage and do something that will be productive for eternity. And so we commit this crowd, we commit this people, we commit our church to the purpose of reaching people for Christ and effectively bringing them to a mature standing in the faith, for it is in Jesus' name I pray. Amen.